Today's daf is for the Aliyah's Neshama of the 15th Yahrzeit of Chana Bela Bat Shaul Yisrael, the mother of our dear Mordechai, who has been gracious enough to show us his lovely face this morning. We only wish we could have it more often, but at least we've got his name up there in neon lights.
Disappearing shortly.
I know. Okay, wonderful. Great to see everybody. And today's daf in Masechet Shavuot brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh is daf Memchet. And I think we're still a little bit at the bottom. I think we're at the last few lines at the bottom. Let me just remember for a moment, because that's the way I remember it. If I'm wrong, please correct me. But I'm pretty sure. Rabbi said that we were up to Masi Rivuna Bar Yehuda. I think so, right? Okay, one minute. All right. Fine. So then, let's start. Okay, today's daf then in Masechet Shavuot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Memchet, and we're holding at the last question that we had yesterday, which is at the bottom of Mem Zayin, Amid Beis, of course. And we had yesterday a machlokas about how we deal with a situation where we've got a contradiction between Edim. And the question is, and when I say between Edim, it's not between individual Edim in one cot, but between two Kitei Edim. So we have an Edus that's Mukheshet. We have no way of knowing who is saying the truth and who is lying. So we definitely have somebody that's lying. But on the other hand, remember, the way that Halacha works is based on Chazakah. And since both of these have Echezkas Kashas, so individually, if they don't come together, individually, the both Kitot would still be in the same state, the same Chazaka of Kosher Edus that they were before the whole deal exploded and we found out that somebody's lying. And therefore, it should be okay for them to appear separately. That's what Ravuna said. Whereas Rav Chista was very much against that. And he said, we don't allow into Besdin someone based on a chazakah to be able to take money from someone else because we're assuming that he's kosher. We know that one of them wasn't kosher, so how do we have a right to base a din on something where if they both had come together, we wouldn't be able to listen to them? So today, Rav Huna Bar Yehuda actually asks a shaila on Rav Chista's, who's finding you cannot use a aid that was mukash, from a maisa about the din of edim that are being made on seeing the new moon. Now, in order to be able to accept their edus, they're going to have to be going through the same kind of cross-examination that edus would go through for mammon. So part of that cross-examination is that they have to be able to define the declination and the ascension of the moon. Now, in those days, nowadays, as you know, the standard for measuring in terms of, I mean, obviously the correct way to measure is using the exact angle, right? But for that, you need an instrument. So how do we measure nowadays if you're just out in the field? So nowadays, there's a standard way of measuring. Standard way of measuring is you hold your hand out as far out in front of you, in front of your eyes as you can. And then there's different levels of how many angles are included in one. So the sit, which is the Gemara's, the distance between your thumb and your little finger, as far as it stretches. So fine, so that's considered to be 50 degrees. And then a closed fist is considered to be 25 degrees, and so on and so forth, right? So each etzba has a different shear, and because of that, we can ask them, okay, how many we would say today, and what size of your hand expansion would the moon have been above the horizon? Now, in those days, the way that they measured the height of a body above the horizon was that they took something that everybody who would be traveling would have in their hands. So instead of holding your hand out, they would say, hold out your mobile phone. And I'm sorry. They would say, hold out your, the stick, remember, that they used to hold for being able to get to shore, which is a mardat. So to be able to get ashore, to walk in a correct line, so they would have a mardat, right? It's like an ox goad, they call it today. So that was what was always in a traveler's hand. So they say, hold out the mardat and see how far above the horizon the moon appeared on your mardat. Fine. So one of the Edim in this case said that the moon was 2 mardaot above the horizon. And the other 8 said it was 3 mardaot above the horizon. Edutan kayemet, because look, I mean, it's not a very big difference between the 2. Mardat is not very high at that distance from your eyes. And because of that, we say, okay, you know, people are normally not, if they're not professional astronomers, then they're not going to be that medayik. But if one of them said that it was 3 mardaot and the other one said it was 5 mardaot, and then we've got a big difference between them, that can't just be a mistake. And therefore, it's considered to be an edus that are makhish, one or the other. One of them must have been imagining, meaning that he's lying. And it's betela, edus and betela. Now, can another guy come along and join up with one of these edim if he agrees with one or the other? So the question is, if it's nogea mitstarfim la'edus acheres, yes, they could still be mitstarf la'edus acheres. I'm assuming that la'edus acheres means that we don't view either of these edim as being pasul just because we know that one of them was lying. I'm assuming that means in anything, even if it comes to an edus momon, which is, of course, the opposite of Rav Chisda. It's a raya to Rav Huna that if somebody is only a kosher aid based on his hazoka, because we don't know for sure that he was the one that was lying, that it's okay to be mitzarifim for Eda's mama. That's what it seems clear over here. Omar Rava, no, it doesn't mean that. It means hu v'acher mitzarifim la'edut acheret about Rosh Chodesh. It means that if another aid comes along and says that like one of them, so now they make a new cut of aiding, and that's because ein dvarav shel havitrei, the ein dvarav shel echad b'mokam shnayim, since you now have 2 witnesses, essentially. We never had a single cut yet. So now you have 2 witnesses that are saying, let's say 3 mardaot, and 1 witness that says 5 mardaot, his edus is completely batal. That's what it means. So in the same case, if you're mevatal, because the das of 1 witness, if you have a real edus, remember, we're not talking about opinions in terms of the weight of opinions. We're talking about at what point do we get to the transition between just information and the Torah's magical tipping point in which something is an edus. There's never a comparison of information to edus, right? So once you've got 2, the opinion against them is completely not there. It simply doesn't register because it's not part of testimony. But to say that we'd be able to utilize something where we both of them have the same problem in their edus, that we wouldn't necessarily say. So you can't bring a raya from here. Let's move.
Are we thinking that there's a lawyer here? I know that there's the prochoshe that to change the edus, but here, isn't it because people made a mistake in evaluation?
No, we say that it's too big of a mistake. The mistake is between 1 mardot and 2 mardot, but between 3 and 5 is too big of a mistake. That's the whole point, right? Okay.
And then, but we have mistakes where they found there's another moon and it wasn't. Why are we?
Okay, that's a nice question for Rosh Chodesh, but not for our daf. Okay, so the next piece in the Mishnah was what? Omar lechen v'niten li b'dinar perot. All right, so we have this whole situation in which there's a fight between the customer and the makolet man. So the makolet man claims, I gave it to you, and you never paid. And the other guy says, no, I paid you. You put it in the cash register. So we say over there that the customer is able to basically walk away with it if he makes a shvua that he already paid. Fine. Now, the issue that we have over here is that according to Rabbi Yehuda says that Yoda Yalal Yoina, so whoever has the actual chazaka on the peres, he's the guy that is Yoda Yalal Yoina, and he has a right to keep it. So, Tanya, how does this work? Omer Rabbi Yehuda. So the way Rabbi Yehuda explains himself at much greater length in the Braita is like this, to make it clear what it means. Emata. When do we say that the kone, he has to be nishba, that he already paid? That's only where we've got the order is sitting basically next to the cab, between the cash register and the kone. So it's a pretty standard situation. It's on the other side of the cash register. It's already been rung up and so on. Now he wants to put it into his basket and walk away. And now the storekeeper is saying, where's the money? So here, since it's in between them, Shneim or Rina Leim, and both of them claim, this is mine. I already paid for it. And the Chenveni is claiming, no, this is mine. You haven't paid for it yet. So then, yes, but if it's already in the shopping basket of the customer, then it's already considered to be in his rishus, because there are standards for the way that people deal with business transactions. So normally, at least at that time, in that situation, the chenveni would not allow a guy, excuse me, sir, first pay, and then you can take it and put it in your basket. If it's already in his basket, so then, enochinami, he's considered to be mochzer. That's the shita of Rav Yehuda. We'll see why the Rabbanan say that that is not necessarily the case. And in the other event, it sounds to be exactly the same, that you're in front of a money changer, and now you're arguing about the cash that was the, let's say, the shkalim you were asking for a 10 shekel bill. I think they used to have those things. I don't think they have them anymore, right? I haven't seen one in quite some time. All right, so you've got cash for a 20 shekel bill. So, and it's sitting there in that little thing, you know, where it comes out. And now it's between the customer and the banker. And remember, a banker originally meant literally bankel, which is the shulchani, right? So the banker says, okay, now give me the money. And the guy says, I already gave you the money. You put it to the cash register. This is my change. So Rabbi Yehuda says, in that case, it's not the derech of any shulchani to give you money before he got the money. That's for sure. Okay, so, I mean, it seems to be exactly the same case. Once we understand the difference between the two cases, we will also understand the practical difference between Rabbi Yehuda's approach and the Chachamim's approach. Because, v'tzricha, why do we need two cases that are exactly the same, at least to someone without an understanding of the details? I'll tell you why. Because if we would have only known about the case in the grocery store, so b'hach ka'armi rabbonan, mishum deperi avidi demarkim. Remember that at that time, the grocery store was not ringing up canned goods and packaged goods. He was ringing up goods that if they stay out another hour, they may well start looking wilted. They won't be fresh. He's going to have a hard time getting rid of them. So the question over there is, in that case, the Rabbanan would say, look, I mean, to say that he would have been so much, no, I'm sorry, you don't have cash. Go home and get the cash, and then you can pick up your order. No, he's not going to do that, because he's nervous that if the guy doesn't get back, he's not going to be able to sell it if he keeps it for another hour, because it's going to look wilted. And Peri Yaravidi de Merkave, the Kivan de Merkave Lamashua, he doesn't want to leave it around. And therefore, he says, you know what? Yeah, go ahead. Put it in your basket. Because once he puts it in his basket, what's he going to do now? You already put it in your basket. Where's the money? So he figures he wants this person not to be able to return it. But when it comes to ma'ot, why would he allow the person to take the money? So maybe in that case, the Rabbanu would also agree that if this person has already the money and took the money, so he wouldn't have given it to him if he wouldn't have already gotten the dinner. Therefore, Kamash Balant, tell me the kayach of the Rabbanan, that the Rabbanan say, even in that case, he's going to have to take a shvua. And I don't agree with Rabbi Yehuda that it obviously is. On the other hand, let's say we only knew about the banker case. So I would think maybe over there, Rabbi Yehuda says yes, just like Rabbi Yehuda explained it. What self-respecting banker is going to give somebody change before he takes the money? Money goes first to the bank. Then the customer can worry about how much he's going to get, as we well know. Avo Bahach, when it comes maybe to the grocery store, maybe he would agree to the Rabbanan that in that case, the grocer is happy for the guy to put it into his basket, because once he puts it into his basket, he was going to, now he's going to have to pay. Because of that, I need both. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, in both cases, there's no need for a shvua. If he's a mochzak, and according to Rabbanan, there is a need for a shvua tzricham. Okay, next case that we had in the Mishnah was, just like it says in the Mishnah in Ketuvot, Kishim sha'amru apogemet ketuvata, she can only collect if she takes a shvua, or if yitomim are collecting, wow, they can only collect with a shvua. Now, what does that mean? They can only collect with a shvua. Now, the truth is, of course, we already discussed this Gemara yesterday and the day before, but here is where the sugya was discussed. We can go through it quickly because you'll remember it. What are we talking about? From whom are these yitomim collecting? They're collecting directly from the borrower and they have a shtar? Why would they have to take a shvua? Their father wouldn't have to take a shvua. If their father, had he remained alive now, if he had brought this very same shtar that they're bringing, which they found in his papers, he would have brought it and collected without any further ado. There wouldn't have been any need for a shvua. So how could it be that we're going to be more machmer on his heirs that they have to make a shvua? Avuon shakil belo shvua ve'inu b'shvua. Does that make sense to you? Ah, says the Gemara, we learned yesterday. What we're talking about is in the Mishnah, yitomim that are coming to collect means yitomim who are coming to collect from yitomim. So in other words, the borrower had died, and now the lender had died, and the lender's heirs are coming to collect from the borrower's heirs. So then they are like anybody else who's coming to collect from orphans. And the din is you can only collect from yitomim in the event that you make a shvua. Says the Mishnah, so what kind of shvua can you make? I mean, you don't know the fact, so how can you make a shvua? This is called shvuat hayorshim. Please remember the terminology, because we could be using it a lot. So the shvuat hayorshim is never a shvuas bori, because they don't really know. A shvuat hayorshim is, we never heard from dad that it was paid. We never found any papers that it was paid. He didn't say anything on his deathbed about it. In other words, it's a to the best of our knowledge kind of shvua, which is a very weak shvua. I mean, thank you very much. Best of your knowledge. I mean, I claim that it was paid and you're telling me that the best of our knowledge it wasn't paid. That's called the shvua sayorshim. And that takes the place of the type of shvua that you would normally have to make if you were the actual malveh. You would have to say, I know for a fact. I mean, I'm the guy who lent the money. I know for a fact it was never paid back, right? Now, question is, if that is the case, and here is what the next sugya is going to revolve around, a very important distinction. This is all very nice if the Yorshim are collecting from the Yorshim on an equal basis. So, okay, you're right, it's a very weak shvua, and the yarsha that you're coming to collect from are saying, well, how do we know that it wasn't paid? And all you can tell them is, look, to the best of our knowledge, our father never said it was paid, we didn't see any receipts anywhere, we've looked through all his papers, and therefore you have to pay us, because we have this contract, you know? That's only Let's get this very clear. That's only, according to Rav and Shmuel, in the event that the lender, the malva, had not first become chayev ashvua to those yorshim. What would have been the case? The case would have been that the borrower dies, the lender is still alive. If he would want to collect at this point, what would he have to do? He would have to make a shvua to the yorshim. What would, because you never can collect from yatomim without making a shvua. What would that shvua be? It would be, I lent your father $1,000 and I swear that he never paid me a penny and here's the contract. Now, he dies and he leaves his heirs to collect with the same contract. But his heirs cannot say, we know that your dad never paid a penny, can they? No. They can only say, well, we never heard that he paid. Well, say the Yatomim, you know, if your dad were alive, he would have to swear the fact that he knows 100% that it wasn't paid. Can you collect? You inherited that loan. Can you collect it? Because that's the only way your father could collect it. So how could you collect it without making the same kind of shua that your father would have made? After all, you're only heirs to his rights, and his rights would have been mechay of him to say, I guarantee you not one penny was ever paid, and to make a shua to that effect. You cannot make that shua, and therefore you're up the creek without a paddle. There's no way for you to collect. Ah, so that's exactly what Rav and Shmuel both paskened. Lo shanu, when do we say that you can make the shvuat ha-yorshim? Remember, once again, a shvuat ha-yorshim is only a shvua that says, quote, to the best of our knowledge, our father never told us, we never found any papers, blah, 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 right? So it's not a real shvua. It's a shvua of, this is the best we can tell you. So that's only good enough if the lender died before the borrower died. So then, in that case, the Yatomim are able to collect the same Shvua of the Shvua Sayorshim. But suppose the borrower had died. The moment the borrower died, the lender would have had to make a Shvua to collect from the borrower's children, right? Because they are Yatomim. And now he goes and dies, leaving a collectible loan with a shvua to his heirs who cannot make that shvua, because they can only make a shvua sayorshim that we don't know, but to the best of our knowledge. Well, say the other Yatomim, your father wouldn't have been able to collect with the best of his knowledge. He would have had to say 100%, I guarantee you, and swear to that effect, I guarantee you, your father never paid me one penny of this, right? Okay, so therefore, in that case, if meit love b'chaye malve, so if the borrower dies first, then kvar nitchayev malve livnei love shvua, he wouldn't have been able to collect that lender unless he would made a shvua, and he cannot give over the power of that shvua to his children, can he? Because they can't make that shvua. So therefore, you cannot give over a loan collectible with a shvua to children who can't make that shvua. And that's called Ein Adam Morish Shvua Lebanav, which is a brand new Gavi deal, and it's Ein Adam Morish Shvua Lebanav. I actually bought a very special pen for Gavi, making sure that he writes this down. Next time you come, you can collect your pen, Gavi. It's an excellent pen, and I'm very happy with it. I bought it. It's a Uniball pen, writes very small, and allows you to write a lot of your Gavi points all on one piece of paper. How do you like that? So it was special for you. Anyway, please write that down. Ein Adam Morish Shvua Levanav. So this is the sheet of Rav and Shmuel. The question is, does everyone agree? No. Because Sholchu Akameh to Rabbi Elazar. So they sent a shaila to Rabbi Elazar, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, and they asked him, Shvua zo mativa. So how powerful is this shvua? Does it take the place of a father shvua, a shvua seyorshim, or not? And he sent them back. Yes, absolutely, it does. I do not agree with Rav and Shmuel. Yorshim can always be nishboim shvuata yorshim, whether they're taking the place of a loan that the father would have had to swear a full shvuah or not. It's exactly the same, and I don't paskin like the shita of Rav and Shmuel. Because, look, I mean, the bottom line is, we only made this as a takana rabbana, right? Why did the father have to swear when he collected from the yorshim of the borrower? Not takana de rabbana. Because the Rabbanan wanted to make life easier on the Yorshim, right? To protect the Yorshim of the borrower who really can't be expected to know whether the father paid anything. Well, we're not going to protect those Yorshim more than we're going to protect these Yorshim. I mean, we're going to give them the right to swear to the best of their ability. So since it's all a takana de Rabbanan, why in the world would we make it only one way? Okay? That's Reb Elazar Shita, the exact opposite of Rav and Shmuel. So please keep the Shitas in mind. According to Rav and Shmuel, a Shvuata Yorshim does not take the place of a Shvua that was due as a real Shvua, Vada Shvua. Whereas according to Reb Elazar, it does. Now, after the time of Reb Elazar, when Reb Ami was the Gadol Hador, they sent from Bavel the same Shaila to Reb Ami. And Shochu b'mei Rabbi Ami. And Rabbi Ami says, what are these weirdos in Bavel always looking for new letters from Eretz Yisrael, trying to get out of here, man. You ask this question, how many times are you going to ask the same question? Kulei ha-shocher levas, like what? Every time somebody new is there to bother, you know, now we're going to want to hear what's his shita. You know, we know Rabbi Yashiv shita. You know, what's the Stipler shita? Okay, come on. Kulei ha-shocher levas, believe me. If we would have come up with a reason to change the psak of Reb Elazar, we would have let you known about it. If we would have come up with a new svara, so they think that we just sit here like a bunch of dumkops. You don't have to send it. However, says Reb Ami, since you've bothered me, and since I'm expected to say something, so I wouldn't want you to have sent this by FedEx to go to all of this tircha at expense. So I'll tell you something about my opinion, okay? So hov atali adan, once you already write me, name a bamilta, I have to have something to say. So I'll tell you what I have to say. I have a chiddush, and that is that omad bedin v'meit kfar nitchayev malve livnei lo v'shvua. The Ein Adam Morish Shvu'a LeBanav. You guys have a complete misunderstanding of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel wasn't saying that once he died, the borrower dies first. Now, theoretically, if the lender would have wanted to collect, he would have had to make a Shvu'a. So since, theoretically, he would have had to make a shvuah, so now he can't be Morish Shvu'a LeBanav. No, that's not what it meant. What it meant was, if he already tried to collect, and he went to court, and the court said, you have to make a shvuah to collect. Oh, now he was already high of that shvuah in Bezdin. That he cannot be Morish LeBanav. But as far as the theory is concerned, had he wanted to, Rav and Shmuel never said that. They never said, had he wanted to. So anyway, you misunderstood the whole shaila that you asked Reb Elazar. The whole thing was a mistake. And Ein Adam Morish Shvu'a LeBanav, if he was Kvar Nischayev by Omad Bedin, Kvar Nischayev Malva Lebnei Lo V'Shvu'a. But if he was not Omad Bedin, then we don't say Ein Adam Morish Shvu'a LeBanav. He was never Chayev in that Shvu'a. So anyway, you guys were off the wall. As usual for people who live in confused Bavel land. They don't call it Bavel land for nothing. As far as we say, when we get a letter from Bavel, it's, hey, one flew over the cuckoo nest, we got a new one. Though they didn't think very highly. However, Reb Nachman did not think very highly of Reb Ami's chiddush. Makif for Reb Nachman, And I said, what do you mean, chayav shvua in Bezdin? What the heck is that supposed to mean? Bezdin isn't what's mechayav. The Bezdin is mechayav in the shvua. This was a standing takana. Remember, these are takanot kvuot. This is a standing takana. Somebody dies leaving yitomim. You have a debt contract. Eidos, I don't care what you got. You want to collect against them. You're going to have to swear that it was not paid. That's a standing takana. Makes absolutely no difference whether the Bezdin said something about it. It's not up to them, and their opinions are meaningless. And therefore, Tainas Reb Nachman, Otu Beidina Ko Mechayev Leishvua, it's a Bezdin that's Mechayev Leishvua upon collection. The moment that the Lova died, Mi'idna Deshachiv Lova, Ichayev Leimavah Lebnei Lova Shvua, we said, it's a standing takana. This now becomes the type of loan that can only be collected from his heirs by your making a Shvua. Therefore, whatever you hold, you know, if you hold, like Rav and Shmuel, it makes no difference, says Reb Nachman. Whether he went to the Bezdin, he didn't go to the Bezdin, pay no attention to what it was that Reb Ami was saying. You make up your mind. You hold a Rav and Shmuel, then you have to make a Rav and Shmuel correction in this case, and therefore he can't collect even if he hadn't gone to Bezdin. If you don't hold a Rav and Shmuel, and you hold like Reb Elazar that a shvuas a yorshim is enough to collect, so then you hold of Rav and Shmuel. But don't give me this phony stuff about, well, Rav and Shmuel only meant it in a case we already went to Bezdin. Going to Bezdin is completely irrelevant, Reb Ami, and therefore don't add your chedushim, please. So make up your mind. Wait a minute. What do you mean make up your mind? Make up your mind seems to imply that Reb Nachman himself did not make up his mind. I mean, why don't you just tell us what the din is? What do you mean? If you hold a Rav Shmuel, if you don't hold a Rav Shmuel, come on, Reb Nachman, you're the guy that's supposed to be paskening over here. We always came to you, and we came to you yesterday, and we were told, Rav Yosef Bar Minyomi said, that Reb Nachman was actually Ovad Uvda, and he decided that they should be Yachloku, which is for sure not like Rav and Shmuel, right? Rav and Shmuel, they say that in a case where neither of them can make a Shvua, they said that basically, there's Chazer Shvua L'Mekoma. And Reb Nachman said, Beferish, no, they actually do a Yachloku. So why are you saying, you make up your mind? Why don't you make up your mind? Yesterday you were saying not like Rav and Shmuel, you know. And now you're telling me that you do. It's up to me. And oh, come on. That was talking about the Dvar of the Rebbe Meir, Ka'amar. Remember that it all started in the Mishnah with a question of how do we understand Chazer Shvua L'Mekoma, right? So that was the question of what did Rebbe Meir mean when he said that. That was the question. So according to Rav and Shmuel said that Rebbe Meir said it goes back to Har Sinai, which means that you cannot collect it. That was Rav and Shmuel's opinion. So fine, in Benogea, that he wasn't sure about whether Rav and Shmuel are right about what Rebbe Meir meant. But he himself, personally, he didn't hold of Rebbe Meir's approach at all. So there, it has nothing to do with the question we're talking about over here. He held like Reb Yossi in the Mishnah. And Reb Yossi, remember we went through that whole question yesterday. Who was the one who said Yachloku? And who had Reb Nachman made up? He paskid like Reb Yossi that it is Yachloku. So we learned from there that Reb Nachman, his girsa in the Mishnah, he decided was correct to say that Aliba de Reb Yossi Yachloku and not Aliba de Reb Meir Yachloku. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about here the question of a Shvuas HaYorshim. Don't confuse me. Anyway, now we've got questions against Rav and Shmuel. So Rav Oshaya asked the Shaila from the Mishnah in Ksuvas. Okay, so what's the din over there? Starting the beginning of that Mishnah. You must have taken for granted that you know that Mishnah. So the Mishnah in Ksuvas says, if a woman, after her husband dies, she goes back to her parents' home. She was a young wife, lost her husband. She's not going to sit there with these yorshim and take care of the house now. And so she moves back to her family home. and she never presents her ksuva for payment. So she has a maximum of 25 years to claim her ksuva. And if she stays in her husband's house and has nothing to say about her ksuva for 25 years, we understand that to be a mechila. She wants to put the whole thing behind her. She doesn't want to remember the whole business. It was a tragedy, a disaster. She's now happily married to somebody else. Who knows? And she doesn't want to collect her ksuva. Okay, that was the beginning of the Mishnah. So it's a mechila of her ksuva. Now, continues the Mishnah as follows. If she died during that time and she never collected her ksuva, so then her yarshim can collect that ksuva, but also only within the same time of the 25 years. So therefore, they, if they don't press a claim, they are assumed to be continuing the mother's situation, right? But if it's within 25 years, what does the Mishnah say essentially? They can go to court and they can collect the ksuva from the yarshim of her husband. But wait a minute. Her husband died before her. And if she would have wanted to collect her ksuva, so from those yatomim, she would have had to swear that I never got a penny from my ksuva. This is exactly the case that Rav and Shmuel says, you cannot give that shvua to your heirs. And the Mishnah is saying you can. Her heirs could come and collect the same ksuva that she would have collected from the heirs of her deceased husband, even though she herself would only have been able to collect that shvua by making a shvua as vadai. And now, what are her heirs going to be able to say? They're only going to be able to say a shvua as a yarshim. So that's exactly what Reb Elazar said. Reb Elazar said, you can collect with a shvua as a yarshim, even where your morish, in this case the mother, would not have been able to collect without saying, I guarantee you with this shvua, not one penny that I ever get from that shvua, right? So this clearly shows the Rav and Shmuel are wrong. Not necessarily. Maybe the Mishnah is talking about a case, say Rav and Shmuel. We're all with my eskinan. She did swear. She had sworn already, and then she died. That's the point. So since she had already sworn, so she had the rights to collect now. That she can give to her children. Maybe that's the case. All right, look at this. Here's another Mishnah in Ksuvos, okay? Somebody marries a wife. We'll call this his first wife. This is his first wife. And she has kids. It's not just kids. She has benin dichri. She has sons. And then she dies. Now let's remember what the implications of that are. So you will recall what benin dichrin imply in terms of a ksuva. Because there's a clause in the ksuva that is called the clause of benin dichrin. What does that mean? Any male children that I have from you, and now you married another woman, and that other woman also bore you sons. So you're going to, after you die, you are going to be splitting your Yerusha between all of your sons. Some of those sons were mine, and some of those sons perhaps will be from another woman, right? So I want right now to stipulate in my ksuva that in the event that I died, and now you inherited all the things that were in my ksuva, all of that property that was supposed to go back to me in the event that you died, and then you didn't die, and instead I died, now you inherited all of that stuff. That came from my dad's work of a lifetime, and he gave me those million-dollar towers, you know, that Trump Tower. I got that from my father, and I don't want that to go to your children. I want that to go to my children. So that's the deal. Anything that you got through my ktuvah, meaning, it doesn't mean the ktuvah of 100 or whatever it was, monomatayim, it means the ktuvah of the property that I brought in that ktuvah, that goes separately as an inheritance to my children. Then you can split the rest between all your sons, but you're not taking my stuff, right? Okay, so that is a tnai of the ktuvah, called the Tanai of Benin Dichrin. So just remember the situation here. So he married her. She did have benin dichrin. She died. And then he marries another woman, Nasashnia. So this is second wife. And he dies before she dies. Now, the din therefore is, we've got two groups of people that are suing the estate, right? The benin dichrin from the first wife are suing the estate, which means they're suing the other brothers, that they want the portion of the estate that really could be attributed to the buildings that their mother had brought in before she died, while the father was married to his first wife. Meanwhile, the second wife's children are suing the estate for the value of the ksuva of the second wife. So we've got two different suits over here. The din is that when it comes to the people who can collect first, they have the first rights of payment if there's not enough to go around. The din is that the second wife and the heirs of the second wife, now this is important to note, the second wife and the heirs of the second wife, which means that this is true whether she was still alive or she had died, and now it's her yorshim that are coming to sue the estate, right, for her ktuva, they come first. Why? Because, basically, the din of the getting a ktuva is actually the fundamental din of the ktuva. Masha Einkein, the t'nai of benin dichrin, is something that is only if there is money available, benin dichrin. So the regular ktuva, that is a regular loan, and it is not a yerusha, right? It's a ksuva, it's a regular debt. But the benin dichrin is a din in yerusha. We never give a yerusha before we settle all of the debts against the estate. So we're not going to give benin dichrin. Remember, the t'nai of benin dichrin is my children will inherit. That's a din of inheritance. If there's no estate to inherit, because we still have to pay off the debts, so the equity t'nai benin dichrin, that they shall inherit. Inherit what? You haven't paid up your debts yet. Therefore, the first collection is always going to be for the debts against the estate. What are the debts against the estate? The second wife's ktuva is a straight-out debt. Like any other shtarchov, that's her ktuva, right? So clear, guys. It's so much fun to see how the issue is just like boom, boom, boom. Everything is just 100% well-defined, completely clear what's going on. So first we settle the debts, which includes the paying off the ktuva to his second wife. Then we can talk about the benin dichrin. Okay. Now, it says the second wife and her heirs. Wait a minute. How does the second wife heirs collect from the estate if they cannot make the shvua that none of it was paid? Didn't Rav and Shmuel say you can't give over a shvua sayarshim in adam, a person's unable to be mori shvua labanav? So how does the Mishnah take for granted either she or her heirs? Get out of here, her heirs. She, remember, died later. So that means she would already have had to make a shvua in order to collect from the estate who were the yatomim of her husband. So how can she allow her heirs to make a shvua as a yorshim to collect what she would have had to swear to according to Rav and Shmuel? Ha ha! A brilliant question. It's really lovely, isn't it? So, seems that he's wrong. No, we'll have to say, according to Rav and Shmuel, that it means in the event that she had already taken a shvua that she could collect and then she died, we mean that then the yorshim could collect. But according to Rav and Shmuel, you're right. If she hadn't taken that shvua before she died, then the yorshim would not be able to collect because you cannot use a shvata yorshim to collect a real shvua that is required. Ein adam ori shvua libanav. All right, so now we've got these shitas clear. According to Rabbi Lazar, a shvua sayarshim is just as good as the real shvua, because the real shvua anyway was a takana derabanan to help the yorshim of the borrower, or in this case, to help the yorshim of the father who died and don't know whether they have to pay the debt, which is the equivalent of the borrower, the debt of the ktuva. But in the event that they can't make that shvur, we're not going to prevent them from collecting at all. Let them make a shvur zayorshim. According to Rav and Shmuel, no, you can't take a shvur zayorshim if there's a serious shvur that's due. Okay, great. So we'll have to explain it, according to Rav and Shmuel, that the shvur was already taken before the second wife died. All right, lo nora, a little bit of a doichik, but it's not enough to prove that they're wrong. All right, let's take another Mishnah from Ksuvas. Toshma. Here it says, the Mishnah over there is talking about a case where somebody agrees with a prenup agreement in, which of course is what a shvu, is what a Ksuva is. So part of his prenup is that in the event that somebody is coming to collect this Ketubah, they do not have to take a shvua. I am mochel any demands for a shvua, and I'm telling you right now, anybody who comes to collect your ksuva, whether it's you, your heirs, or anybody else, has the right to collect the ksuva without a shvua. He can do that. That's a perfectly valid prenup agreement, and that's the case that we're talking about. So the din is over there. At Enoch Inami. The Tanai makes it impossible for him to insist that she or her Yorshim, or let's say she had sold the rights to her Ksuva, that the people who had bought the rights, she sold the option, they're not going to have to make a Ksuva. But if he dies, now that's different. If he dies, then we have the other problem, which is the Shvua of the Yorshim. So his heirs, the orphans, they can insist that anybody wants to collect from them. This is the other shvur that the Rabbanu were metakein. They want to collect from the him. Then you can, they can, I'm going to say him, I mean from the Yorish, they can make her swear, or if she died, they can make her Yorishim swear, or they can come on anyone who is carrying the rights to the ksuv if she sold it, whatever the case is, ba'im bershuta. Ba'im bershuta is the way the Gemara uses paid to the order of. So anybody who's coming of paid to the order of in the event that she sold the options on her ksuva. You know, this is such an exciting Gemara. And what, who am I talking to? Only, like only two people? Three, what's going on around here? I can't do this. It's just outrageous. It's so clear and it's so beautiful and everybody's hiding. How can you hide from such beauty? Seriously, it really affects me. Gosh. Man, oh man. Everybody's pulling out over here. Even the big N isn't showing himself. That's a disaster. Gosh. What about the lion in the middle of Amkelavi Akum? What happened to the Amkelavi, huh? Yeah, there we go. Man.
As long as Rebbe's breaking, I was looking up the difference between sworn and swear. Rebbe said swear. So I was wondering, because if Rebbe was raised by the Mason-Dixon line, that southern usage as opposed to swore. So it says that it's a rare, it's not grammatically correct.
It is definitely south of the Mason-Dixon line, which is where I was raised. Fine. There's still people who remember the good old Mason-Dixon line, I'm telling you. Next thing you know, we'll have to raise a Confederate flag here in the Daf Yomi. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Most people wouldn't know what the heck you're talking about. Ay, ay, ay. History passes so fast. What was once so important becomes such a joke. Anyway. All our South Africans definitely live south of the Mason-Dixon line, so it's not a problem.
It's equivalent to the green line.
Yeah, it's the good old green line. Yeah, unbelievable. It's the same Rishayim. You know why they call it the green line? Because the damn British, or not, when they took a tour, And they said, look at this. The Jews took all the beautiful green area for themselves and they left all of this desert for the Arabs. After 100 years of making forests. And they, yeah, the damn Jews, of course. Nothing's changed. The BBC is still talking about the Green Line. Oh, God, mamish. Mamish. And you know, they didn't allow Winston Churchill to speak either until he became prime minister. And he thought they would cut him off right away. If he wanted to speak on the BBC, he had to hide what he was going to say and then say it in a second before they would turn off the mic. Literally. Sorry, nothing has changed. Anyway, going, Vitor. I'm sorry. I'm still angry about that Chamberlain idiot. He's still running around over there. So, anyway, the Mishnah says that the Yorshim of the husband can make either a wife or her heirs swear if he's not alive. And the stipulation is butl, right? Okay. So how exactly do you explain that fact? According to Rav and Shmuel, they can't collect at all because they only have a Shvuas HaYorashim. So what are you going to say? Amar of Shmaya, you're reading the Mishnah wrong, okay? The Mishnah is saying two different things. When it says her or her heirs, her or her heirs doesn't mean the same way. It means like this. If her, then it's talking about that she is an almana. And also, she had been divorced from before. So in that case, it means enochinami. There, the yorshim are talking about a case that they know for sure. If she is there, so then she's the almana. If it says yorsheha, that's talking about a case where she's coming to claim the ksuva, and she was a divorcee, and she died first. There, in a chinami. She never had the chiev to make a shvua in that case, because she died first. That's two different cases. One case is from her. That could be talking about a case where either way. But if it says the Yorshim, that's talking about where there never was a chiev on her, and she was collecting as a grusha. Masi renasin baroshaya. Now here comes what appears to be an immensely powerful question against Rav Shmuel. And this is the Braita that says, and this Braita actually is used as a simen in other places. In Chulin, we use it as simen for different halachas. So it's a very well-known adage, okay? And what it says is, Yafe koyach haben mikoyach ha'av. A child's ability to collect something is better than the father's. How is that? Because a ben can collect as a yosim, whether he makes a shvua or whether he doesn't make a shvua. Meaning, sometimes he can collect even without making a shvua, which we're going to explain in a minute. But the av, he could never collect unless he makes a shvua. So what's the case over here that the Bryce is talking about? Tell me what the case is. Basically, we're talking about a case, the mate love b'chaye malve. The borrower died, right? Now, the lender, who has to make a shvua vadai, he has to go and make that shvua as vadai. But the children, if he dies, they can make a shvua hayorshim. So that is when it says, they can collect with a shvua. How could they collect with a shvua? The only shvua that's available to them is a shvua hayorshim. And when it says they can even collect without making a shvua, that's also true. Where? In the case of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Remember, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said in the Mishnah, if we have witnesses that the father said that this loan was never paid, and he says that as he's dying, then they don't even have to make a shvuas hayorshim, which means that they are more powerful than the father, which means that they can definitely collect, that even if the father would have had to make a shvua and then he dies, his yorshim can collect on the basis of a shvuas hayorshim, and that is 100% against Rav and Shmuel. I mean, it almost even says it, the very words that say, Yafe keyacha ben mi keyacha av, is almost a slap in the face of Rav and Shmuel. The whole point that Rav and Shmuel is saying is that the son could never collect if the father can't collect. And here it says, Beferish, the son is more powerful than the father. So what are you going to argue with that? Amar Rav Yosef, of course we won't argue with that, but we're going to explain to you why that's irrelevant to our psak. Because that din of Yofikayach Ben Mikayach Av is going according to Beit Shammai. And Beit Shammai, this opens up a whole new question, which is another Gabi question over here. He says, Shtar Ha'omed Ligvot Gavi, this is either which, with the in brackets, Eno or Kigavoy, right? So you put the word Eno in brackets. Shtar Ha'omed Ligvot Kigavoy Dami. Beit Shammai holds that if a shtar was in your rishus and could have been collected at any time, then it's as if it was already collected. Now, what that was talking about over here is referring to a sota. A sota does not get to collect her ksuva unless she goes through the bedik of the sota, right? Because otherwise, we're choshesh that she had committed adultery with this guy. If she commits adultery, she loses her ksuva. But now, what happened was her husband died. The husband died. Once the husband died, there is no way for us to have her drink the mesota. It's only a husband who can bring her to drink the mesota. So what do we do now? Can she collect her ksuva or not? Because over here we're misupak and we have no way of dealing with the issue. So therefore, who would it be? Who would have the rights? Motzi mechavero olamaraya. But the question is, who is the motzi? Is she the motzi in getting the ksuva? Or are they the motzi because she already has the shtar of the ksuva? So Beit Shammai says over there, the one who's holding the shtar is considered to be the muhzak. And therefore, why is that? Because since this ksuva could have always been collected, then it's as if it was already collected in terms of the rights of chazaka. And therefore, if they don't want to pay, they have to prove that she committed adultery. That's the motzi mechaver olav araya. Fine. So that was Beit Shammai's yesod of ashtara omed ligavot kegavui dami. So then, obviously, according to that, and when if you hold it kegavui, so therefore you have a right to claim it from the yorshim because it was already as if it was collected. So that's fine. But if you're talking about not Aliba to Beit Shammai, so then Rav and Shmuel say, so in that case, it's not, if we go like Beit Hillel, it's not considered to be Gavui, and therefore we say that it's the borrowers, that they're the ones that are considered to still be in possession, and now the lender's children are coming to take the money away from them, and they can only do that with a shvua. Say Rav and Shmuel, they can't make that shvua because they can only make a shvua sayorsh. Okay. All right, so that makes sense too. Now, Reb Nachman once took a trip to Sura in Bava. So Reb Chista and Rabba Bar Ravuna knew that Reb Nachman had done, remember, Avad Uvda, Reb Nachman had actually done an actual psak in which he used the shvuas hayorshim to take money, aliba de Reb Elazar. So clearly he held that you had a right to do that, and he did not hold of Rav and Shmuel's din, right? So they figured, Reb Chista and Rabba Bar Ravuna, who did not approve of the psak of Rav and Shmuel, and they knew that people were preventing collections for Yorshim, because the Yorshim only could make a Shvuas HaYorshim, and Rav and Shmuel said, you can't collect on the basis of Shvuas HaYorshim, and they thought it was a great tragedy that all of these kids were losing out on their ability to collect money that was owed to their father, and they wanted to change the din. And they knew that Reb Nachman held like Reb Elazar. So when he came to Sura, they went to meet him, and they said, look, we have an opportunity now, let's make a Bezdin. And we'll pask it with you. After all, Rabbi Yashiv came to Eretz Yisrael, to Bavel. Let's pask it once and for all, not like Rav and Shmuel. Now let's be okay there, din. So lay say, Mar na'akre la de Rav and Shmuel. So Reb Nachman says, I can't believe it. I've been traveling 3,000 miles here in this cigar thing with a rocket in back, only to arrive at a bunch of crazies who want me to come to the place of Rav and Shmuel and be mevatel the psak of Rav and Shmuel. I did not come here to do that type of thing. I'm sorry. Ichpalei ve'asoi kol hani pars. I traveled all of those miles to be oiker? Rav and Shmuel? You're nuts. But I'll tell you what we should do. What we should do is make sure that all of these people who think you can expand Rav and Shmuel to cases that they were never referring to, that we should definitely paskin. That, look, you want to paskin like Rav and Shmuel, go right ahead, but don't expand. That I'm willing to do. So, hova delo sifala. Well, like, where would it be expandable? What exactly are you worried about? Give us, please, an example of an expansion. Kigomai. Well, like Rav Papa. You know what Rav Papa said? The armor of Papa. Someone who's pro-game at Shtaro. So he admits that part of the Shtar was collected, right? And therefore, he now needs to make a Shvua. If he dies, so then the Yorshim are able to take a Shvua as a Yorshim, even though they can't take the Shvua that the person who wanted to collect would have had to take in order to use a Shtar Pogum. Fine. According to Rav and Shmuel, we would have said, yes, you do. You're going to have to make a shvua and you can't. That they didn't say. Rav and Shmuel were only talking about the case where it was Nogea, the shvua that was Yorshim from the father. Only that case, not cases of Pogem et Shtaro. So there was somebody borrowed money. He died during the time while the Malva was still alive, but there was an Arev. So there was a guarantor that was there. Meanwhile, the Malveh, the lender, died. So now remember, according to Rav Vishmuel, he was already chayev to swear the moment that the person who had borrowed had died, the lender had to swear a shvua in order to be able to collect from the orphans, right? That's a standard shvua. And according to Rav Vishmuel, once someone has that chayev, if he dies and leaves the loan to his heirs to collect, then since those heirs cannot make the shvua, because they can only say, they can't say, I know for sure it wasn't paid. They can only say, we weren't told by our father before he died that it was paid. So to the best of our knowledge, it was never paid up and you owe it to us. Well, that kind of shvua, which if you'll recall is called the shvuat ha-yorshim, that kind of shvua never takes the place of a real shvua. The language for that is Ein Adam Morish Shvu'a Lebanav. You cannot be Morish, a type of loan that's collectible only with a real Shvu'a, to children who are unable to make that Shvu'a. In this case, the guarantor was still there, and they wanted to collect from the guarantor because there isn't any kind of Shvu'a that you need in order to collect from a guarantor, is there? So Sofer of Papa Meimar, this is a good example of a case that we learned yesterday where they wanted Reb Nachman, remember, to make a takona once and for all. Let's make a public psak against Rav Shmuel and go according to Reb Elazar. And he said to them, listen, I didn't come all this way in order to mess with the psak of Rav Shmuel. But what we can do is, what we should do is make sure that they don't extend the din of Rav Shmuel to places where it doesn't belong. So Rav Papa thought to himself, you know, this is a perfect place to apply Reb Nachman's point. Because, look, if there's a shvua that you have to swear in order to collect from your shim, there's no shvua that you have to swear in order to collect from a guarantor. And therefore, if someone makes a mistake and says, well, you know, they can't make a shvua because they don't know, there never was a shvua that you have to make for a guarantor. And this would be a good example of where we should lo lo sifala, don't add more to Rav and Shmuel than they ever said. So Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yehoshua said to Rav Papa, I don't know what you're saying. This is not adding. This is directly what it was that they said. Because what do you think is going to happen? You'll go and collect from the guarantor. And who's the guarantor going to go to? He's going to go to the heirs. And he's going to collect from them, because as a guarantor, he certainly has the right to collect from them. So in the end, fundamentally, you're just going after, in a sneaky way, you're just going after the same people that you would have gone after for whom you would have needed to make the shvua. And therefore, this is definitely a case where, according to Rav and Shmuel, we would not allow you to collect. So therefore, otu arva lav baser yasme asil, who do you think the guarantor is going to collect from? Isn't he going to go to collect from the yitomim? Exactly. And there was another case where also Hudashochi Vashavak Acha, there's a case where the borrower died first, which is the case of Rav and Shmuel. And in this case, the guy did not have any children. So his closest heir was his brother. Didn't have children, didn't have a father. Closest heir was his brother. So then the brother wanted to go and collect with the shtar from the yitomim that from the borrower who had died years before, right? So he brings it into court. And here the question is, since the borrower had died first and therefore the lender would have been chayev if he wanted to collect, he would have been chayev to make a shvua. So now they wanted to know that can he collect without making a shvua, or does he have to actually give up because he would have to make a shvua sayoshim, and he can't. So Rami Bar Choma wanted to say, this is another example of where you shouldn't be oversimplistic, you know. Rav and Shmuel, after all, only said their halacha b'nogea yitomim. Mashenkin, over here, it's not the yitomim who are coming to collect. It's the guy's brother. Amar like Rav, what the heck is the difference? That is nonsense. Mali shalopak dani abba, mali shalopak dani achi. I understand. It's the same exact ridiculous shvua that they can't make, according to Rav Shmuel. What's the brother going to say? He can only say, to the best of my knowledge, why? Because my brother never told me that it was paid. Is that any different than the type of shvua that you would have to take as a yoresh, as the direct child who's yoresh? Abba didn't tell us. So here it's, my dear brother didn't tell me. It's the same exact thing. Who cares how they're related? Bottom line is that the lender, who now is deceased, would have had to make a shvua. The person who's now collecting in his place cannot make that shvua. So it's not an extension of Rav and Shmuel. It is precisely the case of Rav and Shmuel. What's the difference what you call the heir, child, brother? It's no different. Omer Rav Chama. Okay, now the bottom line is that Rav Nachman was not ready to say, let's not paskin like Rav and Shmuel, right? So that means that we left it up in the air to the judgment of the judge. So hashtiru itmar yochata, lo k'Rav Shmuel, v'lo k'Rav Elazar. So there was no psak, essentially, with all of this arguing. There were those who held like Rav Shmuel, those who held like Rav Elazar, that there is no such halacha as not being able to make a shvua. After all, the whole shvua in the first place was only a drabbanan in order to do good for the Yorshim. I mean, why would we make, because of this drabbanan, so we're saying not going to be able to collect? That doesn't make sense. That was Rebbe Elazar's shita, remember? So now that it hasn't been paskin one way or the other, basically it's up to the judge. Hi, Dayana, the Avad K'Rav and Shmuel, Avad. Avad K'Rav Elazar, Avad. So whatever it is, whatever the judge decides, he has a right. Ein l'dayan, ela masha ein avro'ot. And the dayan has a right to choose according to whom he wishes to paskin. So there should be no problem. Omer of Papa, I shtara d'yatme. So because of this, now normally when the court reaches a determination that a certain contract is not collectible, so they tear up the contract because they don't want the guy to go again. A couple of years later, he'll go to some other place. They may not be aware of all of the dinim and so on. He'll present the same contracts. And the standard is, if we've paskin and we know that this is the hilchata, so then we'll tear up the contract. But in this case, says Rav Papa, we don't know how to paskin because look, we did our best judgment, right? The basis of my best judgment. So what am I going to do? I'm going to tear up the contract so that they can never collect. And what if there is another dayan who paskins that they can collect? And later on, it's presented in front of it's my business to say that I'm absolutely correct. You don't know if you're correct or not. Therefore, you cannot say that this shtar is a useless shtar. It may be a perfectly wonderful shtar. And because of that, I shtar the atmi lo mikra karinan light. We do not tear it up. But I mean, if you don't hold like the Rav Elazar, so then we can't collect with it either, you know. So because essentially, I mean, he is going probably to paskin like Rav and Shmuel, you know. So Agbuya Lomak Minan Lay, we can't collect with it. Because, you know, maybe we hold our halacha like Rav and Shmuel, nobody paskened. We can't tear it up because, after all, if a dayan decides that he wants to paskin and be semech on Rabbi Elazar, he certainly is allowed to. So therefore, we let them keep the shtar. Maybe they'll find a dayan that is ready to collect it. If you don't have the guts to collect it, but that doesn't give you the right to tear it up. So basically, it's a very special kind of situation. And therefore, let me read to you from the Rambam. Here's how the Rambam paskins the halacha. Based on this, just this last statement that we just had about how to deal with it, according to Rav Papa. So the Rambam writes like this. If mate halove techila. So first the borrower dies, right? This is the case of Rav and Shmuel. V'achar kach mate hamalve. Ein yorshe hamalve notlim yorshe lo veklum. They don't take anything. So he's passing over here like Rav and Shmuel. And over here, you can't do this. Because they don't know to be able to swear. But now here's how the Rambam incorporates this Gemara into his psak. So he's telling you, lichatchila, since we have not sidelined the psak of Rav and Shmuel, so you can't go ahead and collect, because according to Rav and Shmuel, you can't collect. So on the other hand, ima var hadayan. Now, if the dayan did not listen to the way that I just wrote up the psak, right? And he went ahead and he took a shvua from the Yorshe Amalva and he collected, we don't take the money away from them. Because after all, halacha might be like Rav Elazar, right? Lefichach, shtar chov shel yatomim. If the lover died first, ain't korinoto, ain't magbinbo. So we don't tear it up, and we don't collect it. Ain't govimbo, we don't collect, because ain't adam ori shvula banav kamosha biyano, like I explained before. However, ain't korinoto, we cannot rip it up either. Shama yabo dayan, she yidon v'yotzeba. So in other words, there's a special situation in which the hilchasa has been left up in the air, which always, remember, technically speaking, a dayan has a right to paskin whatever he wants. There is a din lechatchila that since we have such strong evidence on the tzad that you shouldn't collect. I mean, after all, Rav and Shmuel, we don't want you to collect because maybe you'll be over and on collecting what you shouldn't be collecting. And therefore, we tell the dayan, don't collect. But if he did, I mean, you know, he's got the guts. Let him pass him like Rav Elazar. Now we get to the next piece. Oh, sorry. I forgot the little story that was based on this. So, Hudayana Dava Karabi Elazar. So here we have this classic, frumi Talmud, right? So now here, there's a Dayan. He says, I pass him like Rav Elazar. He wanted to have the Yitomim swear and collect from the atomim of the borrower. And of course, there was always this, you know, smart alecky, Tzurba Mirabonan. There's this young guy. He's now the big Talmud Chacham. Who is this guy? He's baskining like Rav Elazar. You're not supposed to baskin like Rav Elazar. So there was a guy that was there, and he complained, and he said, listen here. I have a letter from Rebbe Yashiv that says that we don't paskin like Rebbe Elazar. This is what they always do, right? They always bring a letter from Rebbe Yashiv. So I have a letter from Eretz Yisrael signed by the Gedalion. The less hilchasek Rebbe Elazar. We don't paskin this way. You don't have a right to do that. So the dayan says to him, okay, as soon as you bring the letter, I'll think about it. Meanwhile, let them collect. So Amalei Lechitese. When I see the letter, we can discuss it. Also, the Kami to Rav Chama, so of course he went to Rav Chama and told him what terrible dayan this is, and he's collecting on the basis of Rav Elazar. He doesn't have a right to do that, and who does he think he is? Rav Chama said to him, listen, we just paskin. Hi, Dayana, the Ovek Rebbe Elazar Ovek. You don't have a right to complain about a dayan who feels that he knows that this is the correct way to paskin. Ain la Dayana lamashe in avroot. Whoever heard of such a thing of you telling him that you shouldn't paskin the way you believe you should paskin. The next piece of the Mishnah was something that on the surface sounded very strange. Following people, take a shvua even though nobody asked them and claimed anything against them. That's what it says. Does that make sense? I don't understand. Who are we dealing with over here? Insane people? Who would take a shvua if there's nobody that's suing them? No, obviously. What the Mishnah means is Achikama. Elo nishbaim shelo betanat bari. These are the cases in which even though somebody cannot prove in any way, he just has a suspicion, and he wants on the basis of that suspicion to allay his fears that he's been messed up by these guys, that we ask them to swear. That's what it said. So elo nishbaim shelo betanat bari, elo betanat shema. They'd have to swear even on the basis of what appears to be just, well, maybe you did something wrong. That's a strange type of shvua to have to take. And what were we talking about? Those were the shutafim and the arisin and the apotropisin and the woman who was put in charge of the house, who was also a tenant, betoch habayit, and a ben habayit. Now, the ben habayit, that means that usually there's, one of the children, an older child or somebody who's more with it in terms of dealing with practicalities, and he knows how to deal with money. So they appoint him as the one who's going to take care of the financials. But we want to make it very clear that it means he's taking care of the financials. It does not mean he's taking care of feeding the cat and watering the plants. That's not the ben habayit. So Tana, the ben habayit she'amro, does not mean shenichnas v'yotzei baraglav. He's walking in and out, seeing which flowers need to be poured water on. And that's not called the ben habayit. We're talking about the ben habayit who's got his hands on the tiller. That's the guy that is bringing in the workers, firing the workers, paying the workers, the guy who brings in the tfua, he's machmis lo perot, he sells the perot. So over there, he had ample opportunity to put his hand on money that should have gone into the bayit, and therefore we can ask him to swear. But why can we ask him to swear if we don't have any basis? Maishnahani, why are these particular cases, sharecroppers and apotropisin, why are they different than anybody else? The standard is we never mechayev someone to take a shvua unless we have grounds for a claim. We do, in a general sense. Mishum demori bahetera, all of these people have a basis to say to themselves that this is really money that's coming to me. Because, look, here's this apotropos. He's been dealing, 5 hours a day. He's been wasting of his good time, valuable time, to be taking care of them. What's he supposed to be doing that for free? So, once in a while, there's a little bit of extra that came in. He doesn't report it to the, down to the last penny. He's, okay, so there's an extra $1,000, $2,000 over here. That part I'll keep, So this is called, he's mora hetera. And all of these people, the same thing. The woman was put in charge of the household store, while the Chofetz Chaim is sitting and learning. His wife is sitting over there. Did he ever have the money to buy her a new shaitel? Of course not. So she puts aside a little money for a new shaitel. So you figure she can be Meira Heter. I can just see the day where the Chofetz Chaim makes his wife take a shvua that she's ever stolen anything. Okay. But anyway, that's essentially the case, right? Oh my gosh. Okay. Omer of Yosef, Yumi, Omer of Nachman, Vuhu she yeshta anabin ayushte kesef. Now, wait a minute. Yes, you can make a person swear without basis, but you can't make him swear on something that is less than the amount that he would have to swear on if there were a basis, right? So, we said that the taina, the minimum taina, we said was shtei kesef, or maybe was shtei kesef with a prut. That was machlokas Rav and Shmuel that we just had before. So if your suspicions are about shtei kesef, okay, so then in these particular cases where you don't have a claim, but you have suspicions. So then had you had a claim, there would have been a shvua. So therefore we say, okay, so min rabbanim will take a person's, make him swear even without a clear claim bari. But if even the claim of a bari would not have made him swear because it's just not enough money to have to worry to swear about midiraisa, so we're certainly not going to be mitakena de rabbanim to make him swear on the suspicion, right? So who she yesh ta'na b'nayar shtei kesef. So therefore, that has to be the minimum of a two kesef taina. What's this? Excuse me. a steakhouse of Taina, but that was Shmuel's Shita. That, remember, Shmuel said the original claim is Shteikesa, and Rav said the difference between the two has to be Shteikesa. Now, the way that Rabbi Yossi Bar Yumi just quoted it was posculating like Shmuel, but I thought, didn't we end up in that Machlokas Vatani Rapfilis Yila Rav? Remember, we bought a Brighta like Rav. So why is he, like, just talking about a case in which he's assuming that looks like Shmuel? Sorry. I mean, I wasn't concentrating on that point. What Rabbi Yossi Bar Yumi meant was that there has to be a kfirat ta'ana. There has to be a difference between the two, like shtei kesef, that would work out according to Rab. Now you're happy. Thank you. Okay, so now, cholku ha-shutafim va-risin, continues the mission. If they already divided the property, you know, so then you can't come along later and say, well, at the time I trusted you, you know, I thought it over, and I'm really not sure that you didn't take money that belonged to me. So then it's too late. Once they already did it, it's considered to be mechila. You can't come back later. So Iboyevo, the Mishnah ended with the idea that in the event that there would be a chiyav of a shvua in the future, it's your future dealings with the same guy, and now he's chayav a shvua. So then, if he's going to be chayav a shvua for some other issue, then you can still come along and insist that he makes this shvua utilizing the mechanism of Gilgal shvua. So there's a rolling shvua that you can continue to add. Well, once you're swearing about this, add the words, and I did not steal anything from you during that time that I was your partner, and so on, right? Now, my question is like this. Suppose at some later date, there is a shvua that this person is chayev, but it's only a shvua derabbanan. So it was one of the cases that we said before in the Mishnah that the guy had to swear. And if he's swearing a shvua derabbanan, can you be megalgel on a shvua derabbanan? Or, I mean, the shvua derabbanan was basically a fairly limited idea that had a particular scope, a particular reason. You can't apply Gilgal shvua to derabbanan. That's my question. So, Ibailu, mahu legalgel bederabbanan. Oh, we got a beautiful raya from the following brisa. Interesting case. Somebody borrows money, Erev Shvias. Now, Mitzray Shvias, the loan is canceled, right? And he can't get his money back. Now he becomes a partner with the guy in Mitzray Shvias. Okay, Shvias is over. Let's open up a new agricultural place together. They become partners. Or maybe he became a sharecropper or an artist. In that case, you cannot ask your partner when you finish up the partnership, and now you have a right to say, look, I want you to swear that you didn't cheat me the whole time. You can't add the words, and I want you to swear that I still owe you that money from before Shemitah, because I'm telling you I paid you back before. Remember when we were arguing last year and you claimed I owed you money? And I told you I already paid you. Well, I mean, look, it's all theoretical right now because Shvi has already canceled the chiyav of the debt and the chiyav of any shvua that's connected with the debt. As we learned earlier, Shvi is meshamet. We're going to see later on the pasuk again. Shvi is meshamet a shvua as well as being meshamet alone. So yes, I understand it's all theoretical, but now that you're swearing anyway, I would like you to tell me to my face with this same shvua that I owed you that money, okay? Let me hear you say that. You can't do that. Ein megalgalin. Now, why ein megalgalin? Because it was Mitzray Shvias, right? Because what's the point? Is it going to make any difference? What are we talking about? Just to prove my point, I want you to swear? There's no such thing as just to prove my point, I want you to swear. Isn't that the problem? So the only reason that in this case we don't make the guy swear is only because Taima to love Amen or Erev Shvias is because anyway the debt is canceled. The Ata Shvias a facte. But suppose the same thing would have happened in other years where there was no Shemitah to cancel it, then we would have been Megalgal Shvua. I mean, it's obvious. Anybody who reads this sees that. So then that means that there is definitely a way to use a shvua derabanan, because it says over here, you can't use the shvua of the partnership. The partnership is a shvua derabanan, where you nishboim v'notar. So apparently, you can use a shvua derabanan under normal circumstances. If it wouldn't have been Shemitah, you could have used it. Well, you know, maybe that's not what this braita is meant to imply. Maybe what the braita was meant to imply is something else. And only because of the fact that the loan was made before Shvius and the partnership was made after Shvius. But if the partnership was made before Shvius and the loan was made after Shvius, then you can have him swear. Maybe that's what it is. And that is very logical, by the way, because does Shvius take off the chiv of the shvua of its partnership dissolving? No. Shvius affects one thing and one thing only. Mashayado, it has to be somebody who has a loan. If you owe somebody money for some other thing, there's nothing to do with Shvius. Shvius doesn't get involved in partnership arguments. And therefore, that's what the Brit is trying to bring out. Had it been the other way around, and now you have to swear because of the partnership you had before, so then you could use that to tell me that you should swear also on money. So that would be the point. So if, let's see that inside, Ela Ema. But if the point was that he became a shut of Erev Shvius, and then Lamatzai Shvius he took a loan, then we will be Megalgal Ashvua about his partnership from before. But of course, this is a shvua d'oraita in this case. If he had an argument about a loan that was made after shvius, it doesn't prove anything, right? Says the Gemara, no, absolutely not. You cannot tell me that that is what the implications of the braita are, because for heaven's sakes, why do you tell me things before you read the end of the braita? Read the end of the braita. The end of the braita speaks out precisely that case, not as an implication of the first case, but as a different case. Listen, Abadya Katanila, quote, but if if he became a partner before Shvius and after Shvius he took a loan from him, then Megalgalin, if he gets into a fight in court about the loan and he has to talk about his, he has to take a shvua d'oraisa, so then we will be Megalgal for the partnership issues. That means that our original understanding of the first part of the braita meant exactly what we thought it meant. That the only reason that we're not Megalgal is because Shemitah had already canceled that loan. So the whole thing was all theoretical and had no practical application. But in a normal year, we would have. So that proves the opposite of what you set out to prove. So Shmamina, that in fact, Megalgalin b'Rabbanan, that's what we thought we wanted to prove. And it's true. You can be Megalgal Shvua d'Rabbanan, and that absolutely proves. Shmamina. Amar Rav Huna. The truth is that any one of the shvuas derabanan you can use as a gilgal shvua for some other shvua, except for one. Except for the case of the sakhir, where over there, the sakhir, the worker, is basically making that shvua for what reason? Remember, the only reason that he's collecting is because we trust him that on the same day, that was what it was limited to, on the same day that he was meant to be paid, that the standard is that the owner who was paying him, the balabayit who's paying him, is going to be confused, and that we also have a chazakah that he wouldn't have come along. Then we have these social issues that he's dependent on it and that people want to be able to get the whole business we had before. That shvua ultimately is only there as we came out, is la'afis da'ato shel balabayit, right? Make the balabayit feel, well, you know, because of all of these social things, they're going to put these structures into place and make a chiyuv kavua, and it's not fair because it, okay, so fine. So we give him at least, you know, let me know that I have some kind of hold over this guy. He just can't come in here and walk off with my wallet. Okay, fine. He'll make a shvua. But that's not a shvua that really is based on a chiyuv. And therefore, you cannot use it to be megalgalin. So a sakhir ain't megalgalin. Rav Chisda seems to be saying the same thing, except that he uses different words. Rav Chisda says, "Rechol ein mekilin." We're not going to be mekel on somebody that he can get away with not having to take that Gilgal Shvuah. Chutz mi sachir de mekilin. Unless we're talking about that one case of the worker who's swearing to collect his salary, over there we're mekel on him that he does not have to take a Gilgal if the guy says, and also swear to me, I don't have to swear anything else. I mean, isn't that the same thing? So what's the difference between the way Rav Chisda said it and the way Rav Huna said it? My benayim. Oh, there is a difference, subtle difference. But if you analyze the language, it's clear that there's a difference. The difference between them is ika binayu liftoach lo. The question is whether the Bezdin opens up the possibility of the Gilgal Shvuah, or whether Gilgal Shvuah would only be open when the person asks the court to include the other chiyuv in it. So basically, the Lashon of Rav Huna, what was the Lashon of Rav Huna? L'chol megalgalin. That's talking to the Bezdin. L'chol megalgalin means that a Bezdin will say that, listen, if this guy has to take a Shvuah and you still have these other claims against him, he's going to have to swear about these other claims also. Masha Enkein, Rav Chisda says mekilin. Mekilin is in terms of a response to something else. Right. So then what it's saying is that the Bezdin itself is not going to be mekil on somebody who's being sued. But if nobody's suing him, they're not going to suggest that he has to take it as a Gilgal Shvuah from the point of view of the Bezdin. So that means that there's an underlying, very important difference of how to look at Gilgal Shvuah in terms of its legal application. And the last thing that we saw in the Mishnah was that Shvias is Meshamet not only a loan, but it's Meshamet the Shvua on a loan. Minan Emile, Omer of Gidol, Omer Rav, the Omer Kro, Vized Devar Hashemita. That means, well, what, Dibor? This is Afilu Dibor. Zed Devar Hashemita teaches us that even a Chiev of Dibor, namely a Chiev of needing to take a Shvua, even that is something that the Shemitah applies to. Hadron alach kol hanishba'in
bli neder.
I thought that the radio won out there. I'm telling you what.
I was just a bit behind in trying to catch up.
Are you going to continue?
Are we going to function?
Well, I should sure hope so. I mean, what, are you so anxious to hear the news report?
No, wait a minute.
Just wait a minute.
Wait. We're not on a parak. We're on a masechta, no?
No, siree. Get yourself a new Gemara.
Okay.
Wait. Let me start a new recording once we get your beautiful voice in there. Hold on. Hold on just one second.
For some reason, I thought we were at the end of the masechta.
Well, you've been practicing for that big day with the whole bully netter thing. You know, I understand how that happened.
Yeah.